about a place that you wanna go to, where fantasy and guilty pleasures all come true. His name is Vendor and he's the king of the green room, with McLovin in the oven with all his tattoos. It's the
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
Den of Sin.
With the big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and her friend. Painted black or white, all full of fear. Jägermeister's always welcome here. Sunday night is unsigned prime time. Better check it out or pay the price. It's the
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
Den of Sin.
With the big old grin.
Den of Sin.
Bring your sister and a friend.
Den of Sin.
Don't you wanna come in?
Den of Sin.
Let the madness begin.
The Den of Sin, Sunday nights from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the STRN Radio Network.
The number one source of rock and talk radio. Rock and talk radio. Here on STRN Radio. Here on STRN Radio.
Welcome to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet. And my special guest tonight, Dr. Brooks Agnew. He's published more than 100 articles and papers and has been featured in numerous documentaries and lectured internationally on subjects ranging from radiation spectroscopy to transdimensional movement through space-time. He taught college algebra and statistics at Gaston College in Dallas, North Carolina. He's currently the president of Vision Motor Cars, America's first manufacturer of all-electric pickup trucks. He has completed the design and construction of a new 8 million gallon a year biodiesel plant for Green Star in 2008, co-authored a book, The Arc of Millions of Years. He's a commercial scientist, college professor of mathematics and engineer. He's a groundbreaking radar, probing radar pioneer for oil and gas exploration. He's had 15 years experience, a Six Sigma black belt quality engineer. His patents have revolutionized polymer applications, digital imaging, and high-speed manufacturing processes, creating more than 5,000 jobs. He's featured scientists in numerous video documentaries, Holes in Heaven, The Horizon Project, Contact Has Begun, etc. Current leader of the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition, NPIEE, spokesman for the ICIS Peace in Space Initiative, and did a debut episode with Jesse Ventura on HARP, which many of you have seen. Welcome, Dr. Agnew. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait to hear what you've got to say.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Great. What would you like to talk about?
Well, let's see. We could do it in alphabetical order or in the most recent current events, I guess.
That would be good, yeah.
Well, you know, about a week ago, Chile had one of the strongest earthquakes ever on record, 8.8. Mm-hmm. It actually moved the planet 3 inches on its axis and changed the length of a day to 1.3 seconds shorter.
Wow.
All that in one day.
Ooh.
So some people were thinking that HARP might have been involved because there were some very strange colors in the sky, and there were some winds involved. Now, there's a debate going on as to whether HARP was involved or not. Ham operators in London detected the telltale HARP signature hours before the quake happened, and people on site reported an aurora in the sky above the area where the quake happened, hours before the quake happened. Now, the debate is whether it was HARP or whether, when there are strong quakes, the Earth itself puts off an electromagnetic field that's detectable in the ELF range, mm-hmm. sort of mimicking HARP.
Right.
Well, the reason that's a debate is because if that were true, we could very easily make earthquake detectors that would give us a few hours warning before an earthquake was ever going to occur. If those kinds of waves happened every time right before an earthquake happened, all we would need are ELF detectors in those areas prone to heavy earthquakes, just like we do tsunami detectors mm-hmm. about 100 miles offshore. But that's not the case. That is not what happens. When ELF waves are present, they are most usually man-made.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's kind of scary, but why would HARP be used to destroy Chile?
Well, as it turns out, there's more than one HARP in the world.
Right.
Russia has one, China has one, the United States has two of them, and those are just the ones that are reported. We don't know, but that Venezuela wasn't the target. That's one of the OPEC nations that happens to control a lot of the nation's oil. And Bolivia, which controls most of the world's supply of lithium, which has become the new high-dollar, high-value commodity. And Bolivia is now trying to act like its own OPEC, controlling, and I would say doubling every 90 days, the price of lithium, because wow. they happen to have the world's largest deposit of it.
Oh boy.
So while we're trying to build electric cars, as you mentioned in your intro, we're paying the price, that is to say the consumer's paying the price, because batteries that could be purchased last May for $10,000 today cost $25,000.
That's insane. Yeah, that is insane. That's pathetic, really.
Well, so who's to say that HARP wasn't trying to cause disarray in one of those areas, and it just happened to trigger an area that's very prone to earthquakes, Chile.
That makes sense. Yeah, I would understand Bolivia. I wouldn't condone it necessarily, but I could understand it.
Well, you know, when we have a fixed commodity, that is to say, a finite amount. Sooner or later, you're going to dig it all up, and you're going to turn it into batteries, and then you're going to be out of business. Now, I don't think that would happen to Bolivia for about 50 to 100 years, but, you know, starting out as a third world country, trying to make your stab at the world, as it were, jump into the industrialized ranks of nations as quickly as possible, what better way to do it?
That's true, yeah. So are there any other changes that maybe would take lithium out of the picture? Any new type developments of batteries that, you know, with lithium wouldn't be needed? Or is that the sole best way to go these days?
Well, not so much in battery technology, but I'll tell you where the frontier is in electric vehicles and in electric-powered equipment, and that is in charge-as-you-drive technology. This is a way of collecting energy while you're driving. Now, currently we use, well, there are three different ways. The most popular is regenerative braking.
Right.
It takes about 50 horsepower to gently accelerate a vehicle up to freeway speed, about 40 horsepower to maintain freeway speed. It takes, 2 to 3 minutes at that horsepower to get a vehicle up to, say, 70 miles an hour. Most people like to accelerate a little faster than that, so 70 or 80 horsepower is usually required. However, you don't want to take a minute to stop. When you hit the brakes, you want to stop in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't take 100 horsepower. That takes like 2,000 horsepower. So what we want to do is when we stop, instead of turning all that potential energy and kinetic energy into heat, we want to turn them to current. So we use the same motor that we're driving the vehicle with as a generator, and we then force the vehicle to turn that generator and pump the energy back into the batteries. Now, lead batteries, or what we call gel batteries or AGM, they can't take that kind of power. So you have to shunt it off, or you've got to run it into expensive capacitors and store it, and then pulse it into the batteries. You can't just put it into the batteries because you'll warp the plates and catch the car on fire. Mm. Most lithium batteries can't take that because, like the Tesla, they're made with dozens and dozens and dozens, sometimes hundreds, of small lithium cells. The problem with that technology is you have to control the voltage between those lithium cells to within 1/100th of a volt.
Wow.
If you don't, they start fighting each other, and they catch on fire, like the old laptops used to do and cell phones used to do, powered drills.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've kind of licked that problem with lithium polymers, but still, you have to make a pretty sizable battery in order to make it go. Hence, the entrance of what we call nanotechnology. This is where fibers of polymer, like Kevlar or boron, are coated with lithium very uniformly, and then woven into a fabric, and then folded and then stamped, like into a laminate. These are very thermally stable, but currently they're very expensive to make. The nice thing about batteries like this is their internal resistance is so low that when you hit the brakes and you generate, say, 400 amps of power at 150 volts DC, you can run it right back into the batteries straight. No resistors, no shunts, and no capacitors. The trick now is to get the vehicle to stop the same way with the same amount of pedal.
Wow. Hey, I've got to break into it. I'm sorry to stop you. We've got to take a break here. We're a little bit over. We'll be right back with Conspiracy and this interesting conversation with Dr. Brooks Agnew. Stay tuned.
The number one source of rock and talk radio. STRN Radio. STRN Radio.
The changes in the world today are moving faster than ever before. And it's good to know there's someone who can help keep it all in perspective. Psychic medium and paranormal life consultant and renowned author Rick Hayes can help you get through these tough times. Through prayer, faith, and guidance, Rick Hayes can take you on a path to acknowledge the appreciation of life's gift. Amazing and very real, the best at what he does, states the producers of the highly acclaimed film, The Possessed. Rick Hayes, founder of Life's Gift Incorporated, offers personal as well as group consultations. As a renowned and well-respected speaker, Rick is available to appear at your next event. For more information, go to www.lifesgift.com. Rick Hayes, living life supernaturally.
Welcome back to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benazet, and my very interesting guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew. We'll take it away where you were, Brooks.
Well, Earl, I didn't mean to get off too much into the regenerative braking, but that was the most popular way of collecting energy. Now, some people are using little windmills and the grill, and they're using solar cells, but even if you covered the car with solar cells, you're only going to get about 500 watts back. A car needs something like 10 kilowatts to drive. Now, obviously, the way we're making that up is we're putting bigger and bigger batteries in the vehicles. I mean, a Prius will go about 10 or 12 miles on a charge. A Chevy Volt will go about 40 miles on a charge. And that's it. You're done. You're going to be running on gasoline from there on. Our vehicles go about 100 miles on a charge, but they carry a sizable battery pack. The secret, the real frontier in electric vehicles is to find some way to generate electricity while you're driving. Some people have said that this is going to come from technology called zero-point technology.
Mm-hmm.
And this opens up so many conspiracy theories. You could spend 5 shows on this. Is it possible to tap into the vacuum fluctuations of space with a small enough antenna? Obviously, you could do it with an antenna the size of Arizona. But with a small enough antenna that you could put it in a car and make it charge the battery. Or that you could drive a car for an hour and then park it for 6 or 7 hours and let it charge itself back up. Either way, it would be a real breakthrough. So far, that technology does not exist. But we believe it's out there somewhere. Somebody is going to make that breakthrough.
Wow. That would be heavy duty, to say the least.
Well, I'll tell you, the weird thing about the automotive business, I was in it for over 20 years, is a very stringent quality system. Now it's called TS-16949. It's sort of like the FDA is with drugs. You can't sell a drug unless you go through the FDA. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't put a part in a car unless you go through this very stringent quality process. And if you shortcut that quality process, you end up like Toyota.
Uh-oh.
With cars out there that have a failure mode to kill people.
Yeah, it's. I can see it's got to be their processor. It's just not the brakes. You know.
Yeah, it's not the brakes. But anytime you go to fly-by-wire, you're probably gonna have a low mean time to fail. But when it does fail, it's gonna fail catastrophically.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to cost them a lot of money to fix when it finally comes down to it, I'm sure. Much more than just, you know, changing a brake and cutting some carpet or something.
Yeah. Well, the trick is that there's no onboard recorder like a flight recorder in a car. When a car has a catastrophic wreck and it slams into a brick wall at 85 miles an hour, if the occupants survive, you're not going to be able to tell what caused that, more than likely.
That's not good. That's not good for the occupants, to say the least.
Well, the thing that blows my mind is that several of the occupants have had the wherewithal to pick up their cell phone and dial 911 and have long conversations, but they can't figure out how to switch the car to neutral and bring the car safely to a stop.
Yeah, I suppose they do have to put in this braking cutoff, some kind of cutoff that cuts the engine. There are some cars...
Well, you don't want to do that. If you cut the engine, then you lose your power steering, and you lose your power brakes.
Oh, boy.
The best thing is to let that engine go right up against the rev limiter. It won't blow itself up. It's got a rev limiter on it. Let it go right up against the rev limiter, bring it to a safe stop, and then turn the key off.
That's if you can control the car at the same time.
Well, you can, because it won't be pushing itself forward anymore. You'll be coasting in neutral.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right. Makes sense.
But most people don't think to switch it to neutral. They just think they can ride the brakes and stop it. Well, you can't. It's like going down a 20% grade at 100 miles an hour. You'll burn the brakes up. And
yeah.
once the rotors get hot, you can't exchange friction for heat any longer, they can't slow down.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what people have said, that they smelled their brakes just burning up.
Yeah.
What about, is solar power any good for cars, or it really doesn't make lift electricity?
Solar power is good. There are a couple of technologies out there. One's called thin film, and the other one's called crystal technology. The crystal technology is nice, because it can take incidental light. It can take light from an angle. It doesn't have to have straight on. It doesn't have to have direct. It can work in cloudy days. It can work on the doors. Mm-hmm. The problem is that they're very ugly, and nobody wants to cover their car with solar cells. And the other thing is that it's about $2 a watt. So if you want to put 2 kilowatts of solar cells on your car, you're going to spend about $4,000 in solar cells.
Wow.
Not a very wise use of money.
Nope. How about
now, that doesn't mean that you can't put a 1 square meter one on the top of your car that replaces maybe your sunroof or your moonroof, mm-hmm. and get maybe 100 watts or 150 watts out of it, This would trickle charge your battery over a period of 4 or 5 days of direct sunlight, and at least your batteries wouldn't go completely dead.
Mm-hmm. I have heard of companies that are increasing the efficiency by quite a large percentage. Like I send out an email to folks. I push it along called Free Energy. You've probably seen it. You know, Sterling's Free Energy magazine. And I send it out, and there's like tens of thousands of companies working on all kinds of products. Things like you're working on, new types of batteries, new types of engines, motors that run with magnets. And if you follow the efficiency, I mean, it's gone up like 400%. Now, Yeah,
we use the motor that's 98% efficient as a motor and a generator.
Wow, that's great.
It has no bearings, no friction, and it will last virtually forever.
That's great. Well, that's good. You don't have to spend a lot of money on parts, which is one of the reasons.
That's one thing nice about electric vehicles. There's about 1,000 less parts in it than a gasoline-powered car.
Wow. That was one thing, I think, why they never built electronic highways. Oh, the poor parts manufacturers wouldn't be able to sell anything because you wouldn't have broken cars, or smashed cars anyway. And then the insurance industry wouldn't make any money because, there wouldn't be as many insurance claims because you wouldn't have crashes if you had radar braking, which we could have had a long time ago. How about hydrogen? I see there's some hydrogen on demand vehicles that look very promising. And why, you know, be plugged into a hydrogen gas station when you can make it as you go?
Well, it's impossible. You can make hydrogen and store it, but it's impossible to store enough hydrogen to go any further than about 80 miles. If you want to go further than that, you're not going to have any room in your car for a passenger or your truck. You're going to have what looks like a 100-gallon water tank on the back of your truck. You have to be able to compress hydrogen to 20,000 PSI to even make it feasible.
Wow.
That takes a long time. And to make hydrogen as you go, you run into an energy deficit. You use more power to drive the vehicle than you can generate to make hydrogen. Now, there are some things to make the hydrogen easier to generate, but most of the commercial companies are making hydrogen out of ammonia. And I can tell you, nobody wants to drive around with ammonia in their car. They're trying to make it from water with potassium hydroxide, and it works. I use it in my truck.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You've worked on some plants, designing some plants. What was that all about?
Design a biodiesel plant?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did that work?
This was a very unique design in the sense that this was a wheat-growing area of the Northwest that had been growing wheat on top of wheat on top of wheat for about 20 years since CRP was implemented. Mm-hmm. Problem is that the land becomes degraded. The soil becomes packed. The pests become 4 to 5 year after year after year. And the smart farmers will rotate what's called dryland canola into their crops every 4 years. The problem is the only market for canola is in Canada. So by the time they end up spending the shipping money to get their canola to Canada, hang on a second, this plugs into that battery charge. We'll find the plug for it. By the time they get it to Canada, they haven't made any money. So farmers are businessmen, and they don't want to lose money every fourth year, so they don't grow the canola. The interesting thing about growing the canola, it has a very long taproot, and it breaks up the soil. The pests that eat canola also eat the pests that eat wheat. So there are great benefits in yield for the 3 years following the growth of canola. So they really wanted to grow canola, and canola happens to be one of the most prolific oil seeds up there. So what they wanted was a plant that would crush canola, extract the oil without using solvents, sell the canola meal to their feedlots, and provide them diesel fuel for a lower cost. So that's what we built. We built a plant that crushes canola, recovers the oil, produces a very high-level, high-quality protein meal for their cattle and produces biodiesel from the oil.
Canola is good for cooking, isn't it?
It is, especially for animals. And if you can leave 6 or 7% of the fat in it, it's tremendous, especially for dairy cattle.
Wow, interesting. Well, you said something in your bio there talked about transdimensional stuff. What was that going on about?
Well, one of the things that we discovered back in the early 90s, it was a theory that that Einstein had. He called it spooky interaction between particles. We started separating those particles at further and further distances. In 1999, two particles were separated. That's our building around there, testing it. Two particles were separated by 11 kilometers. Now, that might as well be across the galaxy, the particles.
Wow.
When the spin was reversed on one of the particles, the other particle reversed spin instantaneously. Well, the bells went off, and people said, what we have here is we have an atomic switch. We have a trans-dimensional switch that acts below, it works without agreeing to the laws of the speed of light. You actually have instantaneous communication across infinite distances without any loss of power. So one would think, well, gee, let's make a modem out of it. Let's make a processor out of it. Let's make atomic switches out of it. The problem is that we couldn't prove that the two particles weren't actually the same particle by locating in two different locations.
Wow.
So it created a paradox, and we're still, as an industry, wrestling with it. We haven't figured it out. It's a mystery. But there are beryllium ions headed out to space as we speak for a long-term experiment, and we'll see what they learn.
Interesting. Is it true that for that information handling that way, that the source becomes, it goes away? So it's almost like perfect communications, secret communications, where the sender, you can't find the sender anymore.
Well, that's true. In fact, if you look at the universe from the perspective of a photon, right, let's say a photon that leaves Alpha Centauri and heads for Earth. We look it up and we say, oh gee, Alpha Centauri is a little over 4 light years away. That photon really has to survive a long time and avoid a lot of dust and gravitational fields and whatnot to get here so that I can see it with my eye. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the universe from the perspective of the photon, the photon's traveling at the speed of light, right?
Right.
Well, therefore, mass becomes infinity, time becomes zero, everything in the universe becomes local to that photon. Actually, no time at all transpires between the time that photon was made from a collapsing hydrogen fusion reaction in that star to the time it arrived to the Earth. Which means, from the photon's perspective, the Big Bang never happened. The whole universe is still a singularity.
Wow.
It's only the human being that's been able to keep things back up again to where there's time and we can actually savor the universe.
Have you heard about about gravity wave theory and the idea that if you can pulse yourself and your craft into ultraviolet, X-ray, and gamma, that you've literally done an end run around Einstein's theory that says mass becomes so humongous as you approach the speed of light, you need all the power in the universe to push yourself past it. That kind of gets shoved aside, and that theoretically they're saying now you could go from one end of our galaxy to the other, I think it's 200,000 light years, instantaneously.
I don't know about the instantaneously part, but I do know that measurements have been made on gravity just from the sun to the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and they've got it pretty close now. It's about 200,000 times the speed of light.
Wow.
The original theory was, let's say that We're orbiting around the sun, minding our own business, eating cookies and drinking milk, and all of a sudden, the sun disappears. It disappears. Well, the light from the sun would still be coming to us for several minutes, but the gravity would disappear immediately. We would go on a straight line, straight out into space, tangentially from our orbit, if the gravity disappeared from the sun.
Which I suppose is why people are talking about gravity wave theory so much now.
Oh. Well, there are a couple of observatories in the U.S., one's in Hanover, Washington, the other's down in Louisiana. The one in Hanover is a really good one to go for a tour if you're ever up in the Northwest. Make the time, get up to Hanover, they'll take you on a tour every single day. It's completely fascinating. This is the world's most sensitive Michelson-Morley interferometer. It is designed to sense gravity waves.
Isn't there a nuclear power plant in Hanover also?
There used to be. It's a few miles away from the Hanover plant. It has been shut down for a long time.
Oh, okay.
That place, the reason it was selected is because it was geotechnically...
We've got to take a break. Well, hold on, folks. I'm losing my voice here. Hold on, folks. We'll be back with Conspiracy in just a few minutes with my special guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew.
Are you in a band or know somebody who is looking for radio play?
Go to MusicSubmit.com.
MusicSubmit.com is a band's best friend. You can submit your music to radio stations, online music magazines, online music directories, blogs, podcasts, and indie record labels. Go to MusicSubmit.com and create your own artist account. Upload your songs, pictures, links, and videos. Then submit yourself for free to any site you want. Check out their submission packages. This is huge. Go to MusicSubmit.com right now.
Side-eyed. we're partially divided.
Welcome back to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew. Brooks, could you tell us about your new truck that eventually you're going to put in production?
Sure. Vision Motor Cars is at the end of its three-year R&D process. We have completed a highway-ready, lightweight pickup truck that will carry about 1,000 pounds. It'll go about 100 miles on charge, depends on how you drive it. We have found after 3 years that not many people drive 100 miles between charges. Most people drive between 30 and 50 miles maximum one way to work, so it seems to work out for most people. We also have an extended range hybrid option, which some people take advantage of. It is a small constant speed generator that throws a few kilowatts back into the batteries while you're driving. The big advantage is that it sells for about $25,000, which is about $20,000 cheaper than the competition.
Wow. Wow. And you say the moving parts are much, much less because it's an electric car?
Sure. And we only have one moving part, and that's the motor. We developed all new technology for the motor, the transmission, the charging system, regenerative braking. The truck's pretty lightweight. We do have several cars that are in the works, but they're not ready for production yet.
Okay.
We're going to concentrate on the truck for now because we're the only ones with a pickup truck in the market. So we'll just take advantage of that market exclusivity, and we'll move forward focusing on what we do best.
Mm-hmm. How soon do you look forward to production, would you say?
Well, we should be exporting within a couple months.
Wow.
We began our crash testing in January. We should finish it by July or August. When we finish the crash testing, then we'll have the FMVSS certification, which is what's required to sell vehicles for highway use in this country.
Wow. That would be fantastic. You'll have a truck for about $25,000. Wow.
We've got a $3,000 rebate from the government for the first 100,000 vehicles produced. After that, the rebate goes away. Mm-hmm. The company should have its process proven by then. It's just designed to give a company a step up.
Great.
It won't last forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, this will take a big chunk, hopefully, out of pollution. That's for sure.
Well, yeah, there's zero pollution. The interesting thing about them is that you can drive them for about $1 a day, which is pretty nice when you're considering a cost of operations for, say, a Toyota Tacoma or a Chevy Colorado or a Ford Ranger of somewhere around $4,200 a year. You can drive one of these trucks for about $400 a year.
Great. I got a feeling you're going to sell a lot of them, which I'm sure you'll like.
Well, We have 39,140 trucks sold. We just have to build them.
Wow. Great. So you got them pre-sold already.
Well, that's the idea. That's why we worked for 3 years to build your market, to build your network of dealers, put all of those things together so that you have the ability to deliver.
Mm-hmm. What kind of dealerships are you going to have in the United States?
Well, we use the Automobile Dealers Association because they already have maintenance facilities, they already have showrooms, they already know how to sell cars. We did have to develop a very special way of financing the cars for them, and that's kind of proprietary. But it works very well for them. Saves them a lot of money in interest and floor plans and all that stuff. I don't know if you've been reading about bank closures lately.
When
a bank closes and the floor plan goes away, the dealer goes out of business. He can't afford to purchase the cars from the manufacturer. When the manufacturer requires the dealer to buy the cars and then pay the interest to own those cars until they're sold.
Hmm. Wow, interesting. Any other projects that you've worked on that you think our listeners might be interested in? You were talking about HARP a little bit there. Yeah, anything more you want to say about that? Or?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about HARP. We know that it's a very powerful ionospheric heater. We know that it's a very effective at moving the jet stream around, thus steering weather. There's been a lot of experimentation done with it in ELF and even ultra-low frequency testing for use of actually manipulating human consciousness. They call it non-lethal weaponry, but they're actually invading people's sovereign right to think they want to, the way they want to think.
Wow.
It can cause nightmares and anxiety. It can cause you to lose control of your bodily functions. It can put voices in your head. And if you're not trained and prepared for it, it can probably drive you insane.
Wow. Talk about scary. I mean, I'm hearing that we have the ability to, from about 50 feet away, record your brain waves. And there's a company in Japan that said that soon they could actually be able to record your dreams in color. And
Wow, that's interesting. I have to be careful when I dream from now on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I get into UFOs, and I have had four experiences where I really seriously believe they can read our minds from space 24/7, everybody on Earth, if they want to. How?
Wow.
I don't quite know, except we're dealing with creatures that are probably millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of years more advanced than we are. It's not that we're stupid.
Well, at first I think, gee, that would be awfully noisy, but then I remember that a significant number of humans are politicians.
There
wouldn't be anything going on.
That's good. Well, we've got another, 9 minutes for this segment.
Well, one of the things that we've been working on for the last 3 years is the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. A lot of people want to know what's going on with that. This is an extremely extensive expedition. It costs about $2 million just to charter the ship. There is only one ship on Earth that's civilian that can make the trip. And it's only available for 4 weeks a year. So we spend basically 2 years trying to raise the money to charter the ship. We started in 2007, and we were making good headway, and then we had the worst economy that we've seen in 20 years in 2008. So that was the end of that. And in 2009, it was very difficult to find investors. So we decided to come up with a marketing plan. We produced a pilot film, a short version of what the film would be like if we made it to the North Pole and actually took measurements and searched for the legendary opening into the inner Earth. We showed that film around the world. We made some money. We actually recouped the costs to make the film, and that's about it. We really expected to sell about 100,000 copies of that film, which would have been enough to finance the trip. But people don't buy stuff anymore. It's just very difficult to get things going. So it's been about a 3.5-year effort now, and it's just purely financing is the only thing that's keeping us back. We've got a great plan. We've got a great team of scientists. It is a purely scientific expedition. We are not counting out the Indiana Jones effect. You know, that there might be an opening, there might be UFOs there, there might be a higher consciousness that's required to open a gate or a doorway to actually see what people have reported seeing, both seafaring men and explorers. So it's an interesting project.
Sounds great, yeah. And is this is at the North Pole, you say, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. The Arctic is open to the sea for a couple of months during the summertime. The Antarctic, the ice area has increased so much that you can't get within 100 miles of anywhere close to finding an opening. And the ice is so thick there now that there are almost permanent military installations down there. So if you don't go with an affiliated group, that means you're not part of a university, you are not going to get into the Antarctic. So the Arctic is the only one open to us.
Wow. And why is there so much more ice? Aren't we having ice melting?
Well, from our perspective, in the northern hemisphere, yes, of course. But in the southern hemisphere, it's been quite the opposite.
Interesting. So there's global warming, but I've been under the assumption that it's caused by this, it's a sun cycle, that the sun is heating up all the moons and planets as we speak, and that it's not so much what we've done here, although we have pollution from cars, of course, and industry, but that the real global warming is being caused by the sun. But nobody seems to be talking about that.
The global warming is caused by the sun. What we're really talking about here is warming retention. Normally, planets put off most of the radiation that strikes them back out into space. But man-made pollution has created a sort of insulating blanket, a shield, as it were. So the heat comes in just fine. It warms the planet. But instead of radiating back out into space, it bounces off of smog and settles right back on the planet. So it does cause a net increase in temperature. Now, that's not the only effect. The other effect is that the oceans begin to retain heat because of a change in salinity. And
so it becomes exponential then, yeah. So it becomes exponential.
The bottom of the ocean is another ocean made of methane, and we want to keep it there.
Right. Yeah. How about the chemtrails? I mean, there's been said that they're here to put a shield over the Earth to cut out 1% or 2% of the sun's heat and energy, and also help to slow down global warming. And that was Edward Teller's idea, and I see it going on almost every day. I see long contrails, which I don't believe are contrails, because the day before, it's totally clear. And they'll say, well, go to NOAA, and I'll say, yeah, go to NOAA, go to National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association, compare the temperature at 31,000 feet, and and if it's minus 35 degrees, on a day when there's lines and minus 35 degrees when the day there isn't, somebody's full of baloney. I believe we're spraying aluminum and barium, which unfortunately happens to cause Alzheimer's, not the original cause. So it's said that we're going to lose a lot of people, too. I don't know. Have any thoughts on that? Or have you looked into any of that? Or did I lose you? Let me put on hold a second. So what do you think about that chemtrail scenario now that I've got you back here?
I wish I knew more. I was talking with Jonathan Elinoff a few weeks ago, and he kind of introduced me to chemtrails. I had heard about them, of course, but I didn't really pay them much attention until he sent me to a couple of websites. And I actually looked at the spraying mechanisms outfitted inside airplanes that are used to spread the chemicals. Mm-hmm. And my jaw was on the floor, to tell you the truth. I never thought that that kind of stuff was going on out there.
Yeah. Have you ever been to www.carnicom.com?
No, I haven't.
It's Clifford E. Carnicom's site.
Do some research.
Yeah, it's Clifford E. Carnicom's site, and it's very interesting, especially the list under surveillance on the top right. If you click on that tab and you look at the list of visitors, when you have the Secretary of Defense, William S. Cohen, at the time, visiting that website, and you have every Air Force base on Earth that's a U.S. Air Force base, somebody knows something. Somebody's not telling something. I also say that...
So.
I'm sorry, say again?
It would certainly seem so. Yeah. Something is going on there, to be sure.
Yeah, I tell people that they're doing subliminal brainwashing, too. You've got movie channels, you've got TV channels that have the lines in the background. Jay Leno's original Tonight Show had these pink lines in the background. Nobody noticed, you know. Jay didn't even notice, I'm sure. He's more into his cars. You have Columbia Pictures, Paramount Pictures, MGM Pictures, Sony Pictures, Disney Pictures, where in the beginning, you know, symbols, you have the symbols, people, the symbols, the clouds, and the lines. Whereas if you look in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and most 90s movies, no lines, but lines now. So I think we're being subliminally brainwashed. Yeah, it's strange. Well, we're close to taking a break. We've got about maybe 20, 22 seconds. You want to talk about any website where people can go to learn about your cars or about your program?
Probably the best clearinghouse is our Sunday night radio program called X Squared Radio. Just go to xsquaredradio.com.
Okay.
We've got pictures of the vehicle there. You can click on that and learn some more about the vehicles and find out if going electric is ready for you.
Great, great. Is there a way to actually order a car there if you want to?
Well, unfortunately, in the United States, it's against the law for manufacturers to sell cars directly to people for highway use. It has to go through a licensed dealer.
Ah.
So we really can't collect deposits or any of that kind of nonsense. They really watch it very, very closely. Lots and lots of car companies, especially electric car companies, have been shut down, investigated, torn apart, and pretty much dismantled for doing that. So we really have to...
We got to take our break. We'll be back with Conspiracy to close up the show with Dr. Brooks Agnew in just a couple of minutes. Hold on. Welcome back to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benazet, and my special guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew. You mentioned in the break there something about a fourth book that's coming out.
Yes, since 2004, we published the first three volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years, which is on the creation and destiny of the Earth, and they're for sale everywhere. But it gave me an idea for a fourth book that doesn't have much to do with that series, because when we were studying the ancient Mayan and the Egyptian and the Sumerian text and cross-referencing it with the Kabbalah and with modern physics, I discovered something that really took me by surprise. And it wasn't until I did a lot of mathematical experimentation with it that I discovered what its power was, what its usefulness was. And so I wrote a book on it. It's nonfiction. It's called Remembering the Future. And this is about the concept that energy in the universe likes to be constructively interfering with itself, that is to say, building upon itself in a ratio which we call the golden mean. We see it, you know, in nature. We see it in honeycombs, we see it in sunflowers and conch shells and all kinds of things, and in bacterial growth. But when we consider it with energy, we realize that chaos left to itself, when these ratios are met randomly, order will spontaneously come out of chaos because it will build upon itself. When it doesn't, it sheds away. When it does, it increases in complexity and intelligence. So that is a direct observation that we see in the universe. So what we were trying to find was the root cause. What makes this happen? How does this work? How did two numbers, two values, totally unrelated to one another, come together in a way that meets that golden mean? Well, we found it. You know the sequence called the Fibonacci sequence.
Interesting.
This is an Italian mathematician who discovered this rate of increase. You take zero and add one to it and you get one. You take one and one and add them together, you get two. You one and two together, you get three, and so forth. Well, by the time you get out there ways, like 21, 34, 55, you divide 34 into 55 and you get 1.618 to 1, this golden mean. And that ratio stays throughout the Fibonacci sequence to infinity. Everybody knows this. It's pretty routine. Every college student is exposed to it. What they're not exposed to is something that I discovered in my research. And that is that you can take any two numbers. Like in the book, we take the number 75 and the number 216. Now, one's odd, one's even, one's divisible by 5, the other one isn't. They're not multiples of each other. And you add them together and you get 291. You take 291 and add it to 216 and continue out. And by the time you hit the eighth iteration, Earl, you divide the seventh into the eighth and you're right back to 1.618 to 1.
Wow.
I went, holy cow. This means that any eight iterations of two numbers coming together in a sequence will result in the golden mean. So that was a real breakthrough, a real breakthrough. And when I started relating it to human consciousness, how we intend on things, how we manifest things, I said, what if we put this theory to the test? What if we go interview people that are really good at what they do, professional baseball players, professional golfers, really good real estate salesmen, investors, and I asked them, how many times did it take you before you really started to be successful at what you're doing? The number was 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. Every single time, it was 8. And I thought to myself, this means that when a person has a dream and they set it out there and they make a move toward it, it's a baby step. It's a thump on the universe. The universe responds, it resonates to it, and it comes back with a feedback. If you act on that feedback the second time, you build the resonance, you build the momentum. Most people, 99% of the people quit after 3 or 4 iterations. They say, well, I guess God didn't mean it to be, or the powers that be will never let me have this. And they just give up. But you take the people that stick with it 8 times, and they get in this zone where it seems like they know right when to move, they know right when to invest, they know what houses to pass up and what houses to buy, they know when to swing that club, they know exactly what to do. It's because the universe builds on itself this way. Well, that led to another breakthrough, which was this perspective of the universe from the speed of light, this non-local way of looking at the universe. It permeates the energy business. It really does. People are just searching for some kind of solution everywhere. We don't have a solution to that, but what we did discover is that really the universe is just a singularity.
Wow.
If you step outside our universe and look in, the Hamiltonian is equal to zero. That's the kinetic energy plus the potential energy. It equals zero. It is a singularity.
Well, I hate to say it, that sounds fantastic. I got to check into your book. We've reached the end of our show. And could you name the book one more time?
Remembering the Future.
Okay. Well, it's been a great talk with you, sir. I hope to have you on again. It's been very interesting, especially more about this on our next show, maybe. Anyway, this has been...
Thanks, Earl. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. This has been Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dr. Brooks Agnew. Have a good night, and I hope you listen to our next show.